But what really strikes me most about this is not so much the image of the beer, but that sweating monk. I mean, I just said a minute ago that the Lama, in a way, is the Buddha for this, for a disciple in the tantric tradition in Tibet. So this is an image of the Buddha. You know, you're walking down a dusty Tibetan road. There's a fat old guy, a tall and corpulent monk, sweating in the sun, plowing a field. And who is he for Milarepa? He is the embodiment of the Buddha himself. It's a really extraordinary image. And it shows you something, I think, about the down-to-earth and pragmatic quality of the tantric tradition. It can be embodied in a figure as common, as accessible as this. Anyway, the story goes on from this. This is just the beginning. And Milarepa and Marpa have a difficult relationship. Marpa really puts Milarepa through intense trials. He orders him to build a tower out of stones, and he tells him to tear it down. This goes on several times, and Milarepa becomes in a state of almost complete despair. At one point, he tries to run away. And he realizes that running away from Marpa itself isn't going to solve the problem. And finally, he comes back in tears and begs for Marpa's forgiveness and for his teaching. Marpa finally gives that to him in an experience of initiation that I can read you also a piece of to indicate what a tantric initiation is like in Tibet, especially in this early period. "When my clothes had been changed to a monk's robe, the Lama said, 'Your name is now Mila Vajra, Banner of Victory.' And he bound me by the layman's vow and gave me the Bodhisattva precepts. Through meditation, he consecrated the wine of inner offering in the skull cup of liberation. We all saw the wine bubbling with the light of the five colors. Marpa made an offering to his Lama and to his own personal deity, and then he drank, and he handed me the cup of wine, and I drained it. And then the Lama said, 'This is a good omen. A mere taste of my wine of inner offering is in itself superior to receiving the complete initiation of any other lineage.' And then he went on to initiate him into the mandala of a particular tantric deity and then recite the text to him that gave the account of that, of the practice of that, of that mandala. And then he went on to say how he had received dreams and visions of Milarepa that foretold his passing on of this important lineage. One of the most poignant moments in the life of Milarepa, and one of the ones that I'm most fond of talking about with my students, came after he studied with Marpa and left to carry on his meditation by himself. He went off not to a cave to meditate, not into solitude, but he went back to his home to visit with his mother. The relationship between Buddhist monks and their mothers often is quite important in these traditions. Unfortunately, his mother had died and the house had fallen into ruin, but Milarepa used it instead simply as a meditation on impermanence. Let me read you an account of this episode. It's quite touching, I must say, really quite poignant. "I entered the main room. The ruins of the hearth mingling with dirt formed a heap where the weeds grew and flourished. There were many bleached and crumbled bones. I realized that these were the bones of my mother. At the memory of her, I choked with emotion. Unifying my consciousness with that of my mother and with the enlightened mind of all of the lamas in the Kagyu lineage, I seated myself down on my mother's bones and meditated with a pure awareness without being distracted even for a moment in body, speech, or mind." Very powerful image of a tantric practice, you might say. I don't remember seeing anything like this in earlier Buddhism, simply sitting down on the bones of his mother, uniting his consciousness with hers, and using it as an occasion, not just really to come to terms with her and to touch her presence and to feel the significance of her life in his, but also to perceive directly in a physical way the reality of impermanence.